Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED.
What is up, everyone? It's Erica Cruz Guevara, and you are listening to KQED's Prop Fest, a series brought to you by The Bay and our friends at Bay Curious, where we call up our smart reporter friends here at KQED to help us break down the props that you will be voting on this November. Today, we're digging into Proposition 1, which basically solidifies abortion rights and reproductive freedom into our state constitution. Here's what the prop would add to the constitution.
The state shall not deny or interfere with an individual's reproductive freedom in their most intimate decisions, which includes their fundamental right to choose to have an abortion and their fundamental right to choose or refuse contraceptives.
If you thought abortion rights were already protected in California, you're not wrong. But today, we're going to talk with KQED's April Demboski about why California Democratic lawmakers wanted to go even further to protect reproductive rights and what this ballot measure is all about. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
So April, back when Roe v. Wade was overturned, I remembered it was just such an emotional time. Is this prop a direct result of the decision to end federal abortion rights? Can you tell us about how this sort of came to be?
It is a direct result.
This is KQED health correspondent April Demboski.
After the Supreme Court decision was leaked, pretty much immediately, lawmakers went to work drafting the constitutional amendment that would eventually become Proposition 1.
Senate Constitutional Amendment 10 by Senator Atkins and others, an act relating to fundamental rights.
Mr. Speaker, you may open.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members, colleagues.
The very last vote, which occurred on the floor of the Assembly, actually took place 3 days after the official decision came down. So even though people had been anticipating it, the reality of it actually happening just really clearly hit people.
The last 72 hours has taught us anything. Is that we can't assume a right we've had for 50 years will be available for us in the future.
One of the lawmakers who spoke is Assemblymember Christina Garcia. She represents the LA area, and she's one of the co-authors on the bill.
And so as we struggle with those feelings of anger, disappointment, disillusionment, whatever else it might be, I'm proud that I live in California. And so we must fight to ensure that we are a beacon of hope. We must fight to ensure that we are a role model for the rest of the states out there and for Congress. And we must fight because today it's this right, but tomorrow it'll be something else.
So let's talk more about Prop 1. What would it do exactly?
At the simplest level, lawmakers just wanted to say loud and clear, we want to give abortion and contraception rights the strongest protection we can. And we're going to do that by explicitly naming those rights in our state constitution. So it's basically saying, you know, if someday in the future the political tides in California were to change, and suddenly we had an influx of lawmakers who were not as favorable to abortion rights, and they tried to change some of our laws to be more restrictive, this amendment will make it a lot harder to do that. It will also do the same for contraception. There's some concern that the way the U.S. Supreme Court is thinking about abortion, saying that it's no longer a federal right, they may use a similar reasoning in the future to weaken the right to contraception. So Prop 1 includes a right to choose contraception. It also includes a right to refuse contraception. And that refers to some dark history in California. California has a really terrible track record of forced sterilizations, women of color, Native American women, people who are incarcerated, basically being sterilized so they can never have children again. And this was happening against their will, sometimes even without their knowledge. And so there's an attempt at reproductive and racial justice included in Proposition 1 as well.
Let's get into who is for and against this proposition. Tell me which groups, again, are for and against this.
So the groups that are for this are a range of health groups. Planned Parenthood Affiliates of California is leading the charge, but there's a list of other women's health organizations, doctors' groups. You've got the California Medical Association, the California Nurses Association, other reproductive justice groups and civil rights groups. Those are the groups that are for it. And then on the other side, the groups that are opposing it are more religious-based groups, the California Conference of Catholic Bishops, the California Family Council, as well as fiscal conservative groups. So groups who are, you know, just sort of complaining about the amount of taxpayer money that goes toward supporting abortion services.
Who's funding the for and against campaigns, and how much money has been spent on this?
On the yes side, there's a campaign committee put together by Planned Parenthood and State Senator Toni Atkins. She's the primary author of the amendment, and they've raised about $8.8 million. The no side has raised less than $400,000 so far, and that's mainly coming from churches and individuals, so it's pretty lopsided.
Now I want to get into the arguments here. Let's talk about the no side. What happens if this proposition fails, and what's the argument against passing it?
If the proposition goes down, there isn't any immediate change for anybody in California. We still have really strong protections for abortion and contraception services. And so what you hear from the no side is actually Prop 1 is unnecessary. We don't need it. But they also raise some concerns because they say that, you know, the measure doesn't just enshrine the status quo, it actually expands abortion rights. You know, one of the things that's pointed out is that the constitutional amendment doesn't say anything about viability. Viability is, in the simplest terms, a reference to when a fetus is able to survive outside the womb without any kind of heroic medical interventions. Historically, people have put a number on that, and in California, it's 24 weeks. After that, in California, women can still get abortions if their health or life is in danger or if something goes wrong with the fetus. But the language of Proposition 1, if you read it, there's no mention of viability, and there's no number of weeks in there. There's no time limit mentioned. The opponents are concerned about this.
Our large concern with Proposition 1 is that even if it represents a small percentage of overall abortions, it really is just an extreme position that is out of step with the majority of California voters.
I talked to Jonathan Keller. He's the head of the California Family Council. He and other opponents are interpreting Proposition 1 to mean you can't place any restrictions on abortion.
We already have currently abortion up to 24 weeks. Why do we need to push it beyond that? Why do we need to go beyond the point of viability? Why do we need to go up to potentially the moment of birth? Aren't we able to say that that is a step too far even for California?
They may be opposed to abortion altogether, but their arguments on Prop 1 are really specified toward this question of viability, this question of at what point does a fetus become a person?
My twin boys are alive and they are people. And they were alive and they were people at 18 weeks. At 30 weeks, they did come.
You know, Republicans like James Gallagher, he was one of the people who testified on the assembly floor.
And so babies like my twins at 30 weeks, their lives could be taken. And I don't think that's the right balance, folks.
their view that they've come to is that these are people. You know, they're alive, they're babies, and they deserve to be protected.
It sounds like some people are concerned that without specific guidance on how late into a pregnancy an abortion can be performed, there's this sort of fear that this opens the door for all these abortions at any point in pregnancy. What do supporters of Prop 1 have to say about that?
To be honest, the authors of the amendment had trouble answering this question. They had trouble answering it conclusively, for sure, but sometimes didn't know how to answer it at all. But then in the last couple of months, some of the supporters of the bill have come out and said, no, this is just about enshrining current law. It doesn't change anything about the viability rule. So if you read in your voter guide, you know, that's mailed out to all the voters, in that rebuttal section, it actually says, no, we're just preserving the status quo. But several legal scholars that I've talked to have said, no, it does open the door. It may actually get rid of the viability standard. And the thing is that some of these legal scholars, as well as doctors, will say, and what's wrong with that? In other words, that's actually the point.
Every pregnancy is individual, and it's a continuum.
So one of the doctors I talked to is Dr. Pradhima Gupta. She practices in the San Diego area, and she was also involved in drafting the constitutional amendment. And she says straight up, we left it out on purpose.
They updated some of the language, and the specific word viability was removed. And that was in conjunction with ACOG and medical experts.
So Dr. Gupta basically explains, you know, if you want to talk about viability in more scientific terms, it's nothing that can be determined based on gestational age limit alone, that there's a whole host of factors that go into determining whether a fetus can live outside the womb.
So whether somebody has resources and their health status entering their pregnancy, such as anemia, their pre-existing medical conditions like diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, that they might have prior to entering the pregnancy.
And so, you know, one fetus who may be able to survive at 23 weeks, another may not.
To put a specific gestational age limit doesn't truly represent our medical practice, and viability is really nuanced. You know, we as physicians are medically and ethically obligated to practice within the scope of a law and treat each patient individually and incorporate their own individual experiences and medical issues into their care.
Doctors are basically saying it doesn't make sense to put a number on it, that it makes sense to leave it up to the doctor's judgment. And in fact, this whole line of thinking, it's not just, you know, one doctor in Southern California. This is actually coming from the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, which is the, you know, advisory group for all OBGYNs in the country. And that group themselves has removed the word viability from the guidance that it gives out to doctors. And it says, you know, look at all these range of factors if you are helping a woman decide if abortion is the right choice.
Well, April, we've been talking so much about this one word or the absence of it in this proposition, viability, and sort of the arguments for and against this proposition, sort of because of that word. Do you think voters are going to be reading that deep into the nitty-gritty of this, given just the fact that so many Californians seem to be generally supportive of protecting abortion rights?
I think we have to take all of this in the context of what is happening more broadly.
Why you're seeing such tremendous support for Prop 1 is in part because the stakes are so much higher.
I talked to Mary Ziegler. She is a law professor at UC Davis, and she's also a historian of the abortion debate.
Californians, I think, quite strongly support the basic idea that there is a right to reproductive autonomy and that abortion bans are unacceptable.
She points out, first of all, polling for Proposition 1 is pretty high. And even though there are polls that say that Californians generally favor restrictions on abortion later in pregnancy, She's basically suggesting, you know, maybe people's feelings have changed.
Before, anti-abortion groups could say, you know, there's already this federal right to choose abortion, so why do you need even more? Anti-abortion groups can't say that anymore. And not only can they not say that anymore, there are concerns, you know, that other states are going to be trying to affect what Californians do.
If people look around and see bans, you know, happening in other states, if, you know, they're thinking about the federal right to abortion being erased, maybe they're not interested in quibbling about some of these viability arguments.
And in a world where there is no Roe, I think what you're seeing is California legislators trying to write into law or asking voters to vote into our state constitution, you know, a kind of blank slate, better idea of what reproductive autonomy could be that isn't just, you know, Roe part two.
Do we know the chances that this will pass?
Polls from August say that 71% of Californians say they're going to vote for it. That's a pretty wide margin. I think that might be difficult to chip away at, even in the last, you know, month or so of the campaign.
April, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Late on Thursday evening, the Knights of Columbus, a Catholic group, gave a big boost to the No on Prop 1 campaign with a $500,000 donation, more than doubling the amount of money they have. But it's still a lot less than what the Yes on Prop 1 campaigns got, which is about $8.8 million. In a nutshell, a vote yes on Prop 1 means you want to change the California state constitution to include the right to reproductive freedom, such as the right to choose whether or not to have an abortion and use contraceptives. A no vote means you don't want to see these changes to the state constitution. However you vote, California law will still protect reproductive freedom. It's just a matter of how protected you want it to be. That's it for today's episode of Prop Fest. This episode was produced by Alan Montesilio, Maria Esquinca, and me in partnership with the great folks at Bay Curious, Olivia Allen Price, Katrina Schwartz, Amanda Font, Darren Tu, and Brendan Willard. On Wednesday, Olivia and KQED's Guy Marzorati will break down Props 26 and 27, two dueling ballot propositions about sports betting. Be sure to subscribe to The Bay so that you don't miss that one and other Prop Fest episodes coming to you in the next 2 weeks. If this episode was helpful to you in any way, please share it with another friend who's on the voting struggle bus. Hopefully, it'll help them make informed decisions on their ballots as well. More informed voters, the better. I'm Erica Cruz Guevara. Thank you so much for listening. Peace.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.